This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.
Back Row and Chill with Johanna James and Noel Clark on FUBAR Radio.
Good afternoon. It is Friday. It is 4 o'clock. It is Back Row and Chill.
Yeah.
And I'm joined today by my mate, Kamal, otherwise known as King K online. Not kinky, King K.
Not kinky,
K.
Guys, King K.
Not
King
that kind of online, if you know what I mean.
Double A, double A.
What do you do? What do you do, Kamal?
I make comedy videos and prank videos. I'm just trying to make the world smile one person at a time, Jay.
Nice.
One person
yes,
at a time.
Yeah, you've got a channel. So we came into contact recently online because we do the same thing. We make funny videos.
Yeah.
We're silly on the internet for a living. I love it. So if you want to check out Kamal's stuff, go to King K on
at
Facebook.
King K, double A, double Y.
Double A, double Y. Double
A, double Y.
Well, thank you so much for filling in for Noel Clark today on the
love,
show.
Love,
we have a jam-packed show coming up for you guys. We've got entertainment news telling you all the what's going on in the world of film, TV, Netflix, and celebrities.
Lovely.
We've got so many guests. We're going to pack in as many guests as we can to this show. We're going to be talking a little bit of theatre, what's going on at Soho Theatre. We have got a BAFTA-nominated film.
Oh.
The producer is coming in to speak about a movie called A Syrian Love Story.
Amazing film.
Which took over 5 years to make, so that is a passion project.
Dedication.
If I've ever seen one. We've got Lucy Patterson, film reviewer, coming in after 5:30, so stay tuned for that. We're going to be telling you what's hot and what's not. And yeah, like what you guys we think you guys should be watching and what you guys should be slightly avoiding. Don't want to waste your time. Time's precious.
It is. Time's money, guys.
Time is money. And I had a really good expression this week, which was you can't make more time, but you can make the most of it.
Oh,
so you've just got to get really like IKEA flat pack that time. You know what I mean?
Use it or lose it. Use it or lose it.
Precisely. And I've been loving, what have I been loving soundtrack wise? So what I do is every week is I check out the latest soundtracks or old school soundtracks and I try and find songs that are related to movies or TV or theatre in some way. Now I've been loving and raving about the movie called Baby Driver, it's out this week, guys. Go check it out in the cinema. I think it's my favourite film of the year for me.
Seriously.
And the soundtrack is incredible. So I've got a couple of more tracks from them. I've got a lot of soundtracks from the new Netflix series Glow, which is based in the 1980s. So we're going to have a very 80s themed musical journey this afternoon. And a little bit from Brotherhood as well. I went back to Noel's film Brotherhood because I feel like we should be giving that a little bit more love. So we're going to crack on with a band called the Incredible Bongo Band. You can tell this is already going to be amazing. This features in the Baby Driver soundtrack. So we're going to have a little bit of boogie and warm up because the weekend is about to begin.
Oi!
We'll be right back.
just saying to Kamal that that is the song of the week for me, and I've been doing the London commute to it, and it does spice it up.
That's a funky background track.
I love it. I love it, from the Baby Driver soundtrack. Right, so I think we've just got enough time to squeeze in a little bit of entertainment news. So here we go. It is now time for the entertainment news.
Love it.
On Back Row and Chill. I love that bit. Right, okie dokie, what's been going on? Right, well, this is entertainment, not really to do with movies, but I thought it would be interesting to chat about.
Hit me.
So, music streaming,
yeah,
and like the whole of the music charts, they're having a big old rumble up and they're changing everything about it. Because obviously what's happened recently with Stormzy and Ed Sheeran is that because now they're counting streaming views to make you into the charts, it does mean that one artist can literally just dominate like the top 20 for weeks and weeks and weeks. So they thought about this and they said, right, that's not really fair, because one, basically it's just not giving anyone else a chance to get a little edge in. Come on, Ed, give other people a chance. So they've changed it now, and as of like the, I think it's the 7th of July, they're gonna condense, so 300 music streams are gonna count as one sale. So it's gonna be a lot harder to get into the charts via streaming views alone. It's gonna be more on sales. So and they're gonna try and keep it like a singles chart rather than an album, because literally Ed Sheeran's entire album was just like number one.
But it's a good album though. You gotta give the man props.
I know, but still, like, you know, what if I wanted to make a song? I've just got shit all chance of getting into the charts.
I suppose.
Come on. So, you know, that's cool. And right, movie-wise.
Movies.
Are you a Fast and Furious fan?
I am. I am indeed.
I have a confession to make.
What's the confession?
I have never seen a Fast and Furious.
Oh, come on, girl.
It's not really my demographic.
It's not okay.
I have a car. It's a little banger. It's like, it's got a cassette player. That's like how much into cars I am. So, yeah, I've never really, and now there's so many of them, like, what, like 25 or whatever. I kind of like, I'm like, now I'm like, sort of resenting.
I hear what you're saying.
But Michelle Rodriguez, who was in most of them, more than a couple of them, she's actually threatened to leave the whole franchise.
Seriously?
Yeah, because she said that the male cast has actually doubled. It's quite a male heavy movie series anyway. But she's basically saying that the lead ladies aren't really getting like an equal slice of the cake. Even though the new film does have Charlize Theron and Helen Mirren, the male cast has doubled from the original films. And so she's kind of saying, look, either give the girls like a proper juicy role, not just a little bit of ass, or I'm going to leave the series. So I'm kind of like, okay, I'm with Michelle on this one a little bit.
The risk of sounding a bit controversial. I think that she did have a good run, though. She did have a lot of screen time at the start. So I think...
Well, in the last film, apparently she went from being a lead to like an appearance. Well, guest.
I don't want to upset anyone, but it just sounds like she's a bit upset because she's not getting the most screen time. They've got the new girls in, and she feels a bit left out, man. Everyone
maybe
needs to play
Michelle,
fair,
maybe
man.
You're wearing a little bit.
Come
touchy,
on, Michelle.
But I think she kind of does have a point. I think that if you're going to have those Fast and Furious, because it earns billions and billions and billions,
ridiculous
they
money.
Do. So maybe have a couple of kick-ass roles for the ladies as well, where you don't have to be in your bra. Maybe consider that. Maybe. I don't know.
Think on it.
Think about that. Well, apparently the UK, talking about like discrimination.
There we go.
And all
run
that.
It.
The UK film industry is suffering from a diversity.
They're suffering.
Pandemic.
They suffered.
So yeah, I mean, apparently the bosses from the Star Wars and the Bond franchises in the UK, they're facing serious diversity issues.
There's no apparently, they're facing issues. The issues are here.
Well, apparently only 5% of people in the film workforce have a disability, and just 3% are from Black, Asian or minority ethnic background. And women make up 40% of the workforce and earn an average 3,000 quid less than their male counterparts.
That still happens. Girls get paid less than boys.
For sure, yeah.
That's disgusting.
Which is kind of crazy. Like, I think, who was it? I saw an article about... in the DC world, it was about the Superman versus Wonder Woman paycheck.
What was the paycheck? More than I earned anyway, sir.
The Superwoman, she was contracted originally for $300,000.
Which is a lot of money.
Which is a lot of money.
Just to put that out.
But when you compare it to something like the £3 million paycheck, it's kind of like, hey!
Okay, no.
I mean,
that's not okay.
Just to weigh it up, though, she did get, because the Wonder Woman film was such a big smash hit, she has ended up getting like bonus checks and whatnot.
Yeah.
But her fee was just like minuscule compared to the fee that was given
oh no
to Henry Cavill. So
300,000 to 3 million.
It ain't fair, you know. And it's all just, I mean, I never ever really was that hot on about like sort of gender equality because I'd never truly faced sexism.
Okay.
It was only when I started working, doing comedy and working and doing sort of stuff online that I faced first time ever sexism, and it made me really sit up and made me get really angry.
So that was my question. As a female in the industry, from your point of view, what do you, I mean, do you think this is a problem?
Yeah, I mean, I found in a different way, not really in a paycheck way, but in, I would say, when you make stuff for the internet or whatever, it's all about...
As we do.
It's all about credit.
Yeah.
So you got to make sure if people are sharing your videos, it's very important that you get a credit, because it's your IP, it's your intellectual property, it's your idea, your edit or whatnot. Where I faced trouble is where I have collabed with different guys in the industry and people have automatically assumed that the video was not my idea, not my edit.
Cold.
Yeah, and they will, I've seen articles where I've had some guys guest star in my videos and they will be credited entirely themselves.
That's not funny.
I even have an article that said, It was a joint video that I did with my boyfriend, and in this sort of article it said they didn't even bother to research my name.
What was it, Anne Friend? Don't tell me it's Anne Friend.
It wasn't Anne Friend. Oh. It was JubeTube made this funny video and woman. I literally was called and woman.
That's savage.
I couldn't believe it. And I was like, imagine if it was the other way around. And any video that any of you guys were making. Imagine if it was credited to me or the girl that was in your video and they called you and guy.
Oh,
you
no.
You would just be like, and shut
problem.
The
That's
door.
What, happened.
What? So now I'm a little bit sparky about it.
Yeah,
and
I'm
quite in there, because at the end of the day, you're working just as hard as anybody else. And it doesn't matter what kind of genitals you got.
Yeah.
You know, you could have this one, that one, half a one, whatever. Mm,
maybe not half one, but
whatever you got down there doesn't really matter when it comes to creating whatever your art is.
Yeah.
So, I'm quite hot on this now, so I think that maybe
girls, you're just as valuable as boys.
Exactly, and
it's the chat line you have to use for girls in the club to get the drink. I'm joking.
Boys are just as valuable as girls. But what the good news is that in the UK, the BFI is using a £20 million boost from the National Lottery to launch like a 10-point action plan. So they're going to try and get more people involved
Bring
in the
in.
Arts behind. And I did hear something about the BFI actually saying that for a film to be able to be considered by the BFI, it has to have at least a 50% gender equality and ethnic equality.
Okay.
So not necessarily on screen, because it would be a bit unfair, because if you had a movie set in, I don't know, 18th century Sweden, ain't going to be many black roles in there.
I see.
But it doesn't mean that the crew... or the producers or whatever can't be. So I think that's kind of, you know, well done. We're stepping up, but we're still just so far behind. Like, come on.
Get it together.
2017, Pixar. People. Jesus. Right. Lily Collins, are you aware of who she is?
I am briefly, but dig my memory.
She's Phil Collins' daughter.
Okay.
But in her own right, she's a movie star, and she's been in things like that Snow White and, Mirror Mirror with Snow White with Julie Roberts and... many, many other films. And she's done a Netflix original movie called To the Bone, which is portraying a woman with, well, a young girl with anorexia.
Okay.
Which she lost a lot of weight to play.
Actors put in that work.
Uh-huh. But what was interesting is now, because of this film, Lily has come out to say that she actually had anorexia.
Oh, no.
For herself. So it was kind of like a passion project and like a personal project to see whether she could face a role with a character who's faced something similar to her. But she was like, she's talking about it a lot, and she's getting all the eating disorder sort of discussion going all over. And she was saying that even when she lost weight for the role, so many people were congratulating her on her weight loss and saying, oh my God, you look amazing. What's your secret? And she was like, this is the reason why the condition exists.
Yeah.
Because everyone's being praised. Being skeletal, which is like,
So I was talking to girls in the modern industry as well. It's a hard industry.
Yeah,
you have
to
go through a lot, and it's upsetting that we're that's glamorized. Because think about a couple decades ago when you were overweight per se, that was celebrated.
Yeah,
that meant wealth.
Sure.
That meant
back so in the '80s, it was all about like power bodies rather than like. So I think that
pray, man, got a pray.
I think it's brave of Lily to bring it up. It must be very personal for her. And I mean, what do you guys think at home? You guys, if you want to get involved with the conversations,
we're
having
today, that stuff like that, okay, let's get popping.
We're getting the audience involved. If you want to tweet us at Fubar Radio, you can let us know what do you think about Lily. What do you think about the industry? Do you think the industry is sexist? Have you experienced any racism or sexism in the industry if you work?
Let me know.
Let us know. We will shout you out. You can also email into the show, chill@foobarradio.com, and we will shout you out there as well.
Can they call? Is there calls?
We could get some couple calls in.
Maybe
but,
not calls. Sorry,
we got
sorry.
Such, we got such a busy show today.
Not calls.
Right. So we will come back to a little bit more entertainment news after the break. I'm going to go back to a little bit of music.
Lovely.
I think I'm going to go from one of the 80s tracks now. From the actual soundtrack of Glow on Netflix. If you have not checked out this series, check it out. It is, in a nutshell, about some struggling actresses in the 1980s in LA who audition for a female only wrestling TV show. None of them know how to wrestle.
Okay.
And it's all like complete amateur, but it's hilarious. So it's a comedy with a bit of drama set in the 80s. It's absolutely bang on the money. And I started to watch it, and at first my boyfriend was like, what's this? women's wrestling. And two episodes in, he was like, no, wait for me. I'm watching two. I'm watching two. So
goals.
Absolutely. So we're gonna go a little bit.
Spin
come on,
it.
Come on, feel the noise for a Quiet Riot, and we've got our first guest coming up on Back Row and Chill.
Chill with Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
Johanna James and Kamal, if we've got that button next time, don't worry. Next time, guys.
Next time, Johanna James and Kamal. Right, we've got our first guest in the studio, so a huge welcome to Elf Lions. Welcome, welcome. We'll do a two finger pat.
Hello.
There we go. So huge welcome. I'm loving the name, by the way.
Thank you. Elf Lions. Thank you very much.
It's like two, my favourite, well, one magical creature, one real.
Yeah, it really annoys French people when I say my name. If they go, if Lyon, quoi?
Lyon.
Quoi est your name?
Are you part French?
No, not at all. But I spent the last year in France at clown school because I make fantastic drunk life choices.
Wow. Why not, you know?
Yeah.
And I wondered if you were, because by complete coincidence, I ended up seeing one of your stand-up shows. Would you call it stand-up or would you call it... It's an entertainment
It's an experience. It's a stand-up theatrical extravaganza.
But you use language really well in it, because you did half of it in French, half of it in English, and it worked really, really well. So I wondered, I was like, oh, is she French?
No. Oh, God, I'd love to be as stylish as a French person.
I'd love to be French as well.
I just love the baguettes. Love the baguettes and the wine. But I'm not quite as classy enough to be a French woman.
London. You're London-based, girl.
I'm London-based.
And you are here to talk about you've got a show at the Soho Theatre, so huge congratulations for getting in that venue. It's called Pelican. Could you sort of let us know why that is?
So my mum has always gone on about how I never talk about her on stage, and how I always talk about my dad and talk about how amazing he is, and I never talk about her. So I thought, to show her that I love her, I decided to do a stand-up show about how I sometimes wish she was dead.
Wait, did you say to show how you love her?
Yeah.
Okay.
It's like a love-hate show. Honest representation of mother-daughter relationships. And I do the whole thing dressed as a dressage horse. And it is all about just, you know, that fear of turning into your mother.
Yeah.
But done in a sort of... I talk about moving to France and having a crazy 45-year-old ex-French lover and how my mum sort of fits into my life. And I talk about if I had a penis, what would happen. And I mean, it's probably not the best representation of the whole show, but it is a good, fun, silly experience.
I mean, I do have to add, you've just jogged my memory now, actually, because you did talk about what it would be like to have a penis in the show that I saw you do. Talking about what you would do if you had one. I mean, what was one of the things that you would do?
It was only one thing in particular, and it is... if I had a penis...
I have a penis, so I can vouch for it, guys. Go on.
Okay, well, hold yourself, because I'm going to blow your mind about all the things you could do.
Here we
go. I dip it in yogurt.
Pardon?
Yeah. Would you ever dip it? Do you fancy dipping it in yogurt?
I tend to eat yogurt. I don't tend to dip my penis into yogurt. Well, I mean, why would you dip your penis into yogurt? That's
just
the question.
Just think it'd be really nice.
Just think
it'd be really nice, really soothing.
Yeah. I mean, you know, all the flavours.
If anybody didn't know and listening, you cannot taste yogurt through your penis, just so you're aware.
Well, other people can. Just saying.
Never know.
Okay, it's turned into a fetish thing now. Yeah. And that was really... Mine was just a really innocent thing.
But I bet I bet any money now that everyone listening right now is imagining, if they had a penis, what it would be like to dip it in.
Please no one dip their penis.
And if they do have a penis, they're imagining dipping it
in
yogurt.
Don't try this at home. We need one of those.
I think we should. Let us know. Tweet us at FUBAR Radio if you've dipped in yogurt.
Don't do
that.
If you dipped your penis in yogurt.
And what flavour did you choose?
To yourself, guys.
We've opened up a can of worms. A horrible, yogurty, cultured can of worms.
Ooh, well, you know, we'll leave that lovely vision with you guys.
I'm really sorry I brought that to you today.
So is this your first... Oh, so you did Edinburgh Fringe?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so that's where everything's sort of transferring. You're one of the transfers.
I'm indeed. Yeah, I think this is my... Well, that is my third solo hour, Pelican. And so it felt really good. I did it at the Voodoo Rooms last year, and I've always done my shows at the Voodoo Rooms up until this year, because I'm doing Page Fringe this year. But Voodoo Rooms was just such a lovely space, and it's such a lovely venue. And, yeah, every day I'd come out dressed as this beautiful dressage horse. This lovely designer called Hayley, she made the costume, and she studies at Central St. Martin's. And I come out holding coconuts and dance to Lime in the Coconut.
Lime
and then pretend to be a dressage horse. Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's how you start your shows.
Do
what makes you happy.
Do you get scared doing one-woman shows? Because it's like, oh, it's just you. It's just you and you.
I think that's why I like it. I really like it, because if it's a bad show or if you don't perform to the best of your abilities, you've only got yourself to really blame. Well, if you're in an ensemble, I think there's so much anxiety and stress. For me anyway.
Yeah.
And I was always awful at team sports. Like, I was so bad at netball and lacrosse, but things like swimming I was really fine with.
Because you're in control.
And yeah. I like being myself on stage and being with an audience. I love it.
It's amazing. So if people want to go, if they're liking the sound of this weird and wonderful wacky show, when can they see you?
It's on next Friday and Saturday at the Soho Theatre.
Okay, Darko.
Go and celebrate Pride and then come afterwards.
Yeah, you'll be in the area. So that's Soho Theatre, 7th and 8th of July. We are there already in the year.
Yeah.
How crazy is that?
Oh, don't even go.
If someone just pointed at me and go, what's the date? What year is it? I'd be like, is it in March? I don't know.
I still always think that 2007 wasn't long ago. In my head, I always imagine I'm still a 14-year-old girl and NME is a really cool thing to read.
It's like 10 years.
I remember Sony Ericsson's on Bluetooth in the back of the bus. I don't know about you guys.
Pebble phones. How cool they were. So many things.
Blackberries, MSN.
More magazine.
I know.
Totally Spies. I didn't say that one. That was me.
I love Totally Spies.
I didn't watch it, you know.
Totally Spies.
I don't know what that is.
Yeah, we're regressing.
Memory lane,
I love memory lane. This is brilliant. And so why Pelican if you're a dress slash horse? Is that going to be giving too much away?
It's a big reveal at the end of the show.
Okay.
But my mum's obsessed with birds, and I've sort of taken on a love for the birds, so all my shows now are bird-related.
Because last time you were performing in a massive parrot costume.
Yeah, parrot costume, dressed up as a swan. I do it all. Do all the birds.
What's your favourite bird?
Oh, goodness, I don't know. there's so many to choose from. I know, I'm really into swans at the moment. I'm learning a lot about them and writing about them.
They can be quite vicious, can't they?
They can. Well, people say that I could be really boring, but people say they could break your arm. They really can't, because their bones are, their certain structure that they're, the way they're made isn't strong enough to, it could bruise a baby, like it could break a child's arm.
Okay.
But not like an adult. But
so they're all quacking.
To swan anyway.
I don't know.
The guy punched a kangaroo for his dog, so you never know what situations you can find yourself in.
I live in Kingston, and there's a legend of like a really angry bully swan that just bullies all the other swans and all the humans unless you feed it and stuff. So apparently it does. It attacks drunk people and everything.
My favourite fact about swans is that 4% of swans in Poland divorce.
You learn something new every day.
Wow. I didn't even know that you did.
And adultery is rife among black swans.
Where are you getting this information from, if you may? Did you talk to swan personally?
Swan Wikipedia.
Really nice guy
the
on the bus.
Whisperer.
We just opened up and bonded.
I went to a zoo recently, and the macaws, which are these like gorgeous, massive parrot things, they mate for life. So you find a little partner, and that's it for life. They're really monogamous.
Monogamous.
Oh. That's the one I struggled to get over that word, which I found like super cute. And so I was like, gonna find myself a macaw.
I know a zebra has black and white stripe, guys. That's my animal knowledge for you guys.
Wow,
I'm not very
what a knowledge.
Well versed, guys.
So if you've just joined us, we're chatting to Elf Lyons about her new show Pelican, going to be on the Soho Theatre next week, 7th and 8th of July, from 9 p.m. which is a good time.
Yes, I think, is it 9:30? 9:30 p.m.?
My little press thing says 9, but
it might be 9 p.m. then.
Get there for 9. If it's 9:30, you can get a little drinky poo.
Go there early, have a drink, and someone will tell you what time it is on.
Someone will just usher you in.
Always good to get there early.
Lovely. And how long's your show? Are you going for, it's like an hour?
It's a solid hour of fun laughs and weirdness in a dark room.
That's good. That is optimum concentration time for most adults. 45 minutes to an hour.
Oh, facts central today.
I know, aren't we knowledgeable? I feel like we're showing off a little bit about our knowledge facts, so we need to just chill the fuck out.
Tweet us, guys, your knowledge facts.
Yeah, if
See,
you guys, anyone at, anyone at home has got any like weird and wacky knowledge about anything to do with birds or
tweet
whatever,
us.
Tweet us at Foo Bar Radio and we will shout out your little knowledgeable nugget.
Instead of the penis in the yogurt.
I'm still waiting on someone to say that they've tried dipping their penis in yogurt or their imaginary penis in yogurt.
God.
That would make my day if someone did that.
A man did heckle me last night when I chatted about it. I was doing a gig at the Glory and I did the routine and this guy just went, I've done it and it's incredibly overrated.
Oh, wow.
Which just had so many more questions.
You can't see me, but my mouth's open in shock right now, guys.
But I was thinking, who's been banging on about, you know what you need to do?
You know what you need to do? to do?
Clive, go home right now.
And dip you.
And do this. And was it for an audience? Was it just for himself? Was it for health reasons?
I will not lie, right? I am thinking about going home and dipping
my penis. Yeah, I told you, see, it's getting in your mind.
That's because you keep talking about
it. You're going to be in Tesco's and you're going to see it and going to go, ooh.
Oh, no.
What flavour? Shall I go for vanilla? Or is that a bit boring? Shall I go for a bit of Greek style and honey?
But it might sting if it's not natural.
Oh, you would not go for honey. That's Greek. Just a... You know, that's just thrush waiting to happen.
That's just thrush waiting. But we counteract it with the yoghurt. But anyway, a huge thank you for coming on, Elf. That's
not a problem.
That's amazing. And I was so glad that I did get to see you perform, and I'm so glad you came in, because I didn't catch your name because it was so busy that night, because I was also performing after you, so I wasn't really focusing on anything but like my lines. And but I was asking you, if I was like, who was the girl with the big pigeon parrot suit, because she was really good and I want to see her again. So amazing.
Oh, I'm so glad you enjoyed that.
Yeah, everyone was raving about you as well, so go see this girl, people. You will not regret spending your pennies on it. We are going to pop back to another song from the 80s. This is The Look by Roxette, and then we've got our next guest on Back Row and Chill.
Like a raindrop, she's got the look. Heavenly bound, cause heaven's got a number when she's spinning me around. Kissing is a color, a loving is a wild dog. She's got the look. She's got the look.
She's got the look.
She's got the look.
She's got the look.
What in the world can make a brown-eyed girl turn blue? When everything I'll ever do, I do for you. As a lover's disguise, banging on the head drum, shaking like a mad bull. She's got the look. Swaying through the band, moving like a hammer. She's a miracle man. Loving is the ocean, kissing is the wet sand. She's got the look. She's got the look.
She's got the look.
Yeah.
Johanna James on FUBAR Radio.
And Kamal.
little patchwork.
We're getting there, guys.
We're getting in there. Yeah, it's Johanna James, and I'm joined by Kamal today, otherwise known as King K.
Online, not King Key, King K, K-A-A-Y.
King K on the Tinternet.
Yes.
He's filling in for 9 o'clock today. And we've got our second round of guests in the studio, so a huge round of applause to you guys. You guys are the peeps from the... Quinton Denton. Oh, did I do it wrong? The Quinton Denton Show. Damn it! I even practiced that before. The Quinton Denton Show. Welcome, Hannah and Luke. Huge thank you for coming on. What is the Quinton... do you know what? You just say it.
Your turn.
Do you want to take that one, Hannah, our producer?
So, the Quinton Denton Show is a new rock musical which is playing in the centre of town in the West End at the moment. Ooh. At a studio theatre called the Tristan Bates Theatre. It's just opposite the palace where Harry Potter is on.
Oh,
and
nice.
it's a new rock and roll musical about a guy called Quinton Denton, played by Luke.
Me.
And it's all about him coming out of the radio of a normal couple. They kind of summon him from the radio, kind of like the genie in Aladdin.
Ooh. Mm-hmm.
And he gets beamed into their lives and he teaches them how to live their lives through the medium of rock music.
Oh, that is actually my life. No, I'm joking. I'm hoping to come out of the radio to everybody else.
Resonate.
Yeah. Are you within the show? Are you behind the scenes?
I'm the producer.
Oh, amazing. Okay, so... You're driving the car and you've got your head out the window. Like,
woo! That's it, yeah, I'm the dog with the head out the window, tongue sticking out.
And so how did you get involved with the project? How did you...
I did the project last year as well. We were upstairs at the Arts last year, last May. So I just auditioned with a shower of other people.
Mm-hmm.
So I had been on tour in a van with 3 other people for 5 months looking for any and everything to do when I got home. And saw the casting and then went in front of Hannah and Henry, the writer, and Caldy, who's now our choreographer and co-director,
mm-hmm.
Last year. And we did an hour-long version of it upstairs at the Arts at 10 o'clock at night, which was awesome. And then it came back around and now we're doing a 6-week run and the show is now about 105 minutes.
Wow.
Oh.
So yeah, with an interval in the middle. So don't worry, the attention spans will be fine. It's an hour break and then 45.
Lovely. Especially if you've had a drink.
Yeah.
That'd be nice.
I
want to
dip your pee. Yeah, you need time for the yogurt.
You
know what I mean?
Like,
you need
it.
Quick yogurt break. Gosh. Actimel through the roof. God. Sales there. And it has been described as the Rocky Horror Picture Show for the new millennium.
Ooh.
So has it got sort of big nods to the Rocky Horror?
Well, the nods are more subtle than that tagline perhaps suggests.
Okay.
It's similar to Rocky Horror in the kind of concept of a normal couple, Brad and Janet in Rocky Horror, and in this case a couple called Keith and Nat, encountering a stranger in Rocky Horror, that's Frankenfurter, in this case it's Quinton Denton, who tries to tell them how to live their lives differently and opens their minds. So,
nice.
And in style it's very similar as well, because the music in the show is it's all original, written by the wonderful writer Henry Carpenter, and it's all inspired by 70s and 80s glam rock.
Amazing.
So in a way of a kind of similar style to Rocky Horror. But what we have that Rocky Horror doesn't have is we've got an awesome live 3-piece band playing the score every single night.
Ooh.
And I was told to leave my fishnets at home, so I'm actually in a white suit rather than in my cross-gartered Frankenfurter.
Plenty of time.
You know, I mean, under the suit, who knows? But
who knows what's going
for what
on.
The audience get to see.
Oh, you're in a crisp white suit. Is that a nightmare, logistically, costume-wise? Every night to have crisp white sheet. Suit.
Yeah, I mean, it's not too bad, but it does, you know, by the end of the week, you're kind of going, that might need to be dry-cleaned.
Yeah, I go to the dry cleaners about once a week, and I text Luke every week just to tell him that the suit's being dry cleaned.
So sweaty pill.
Oh yeah, it's sweaty, especially last week when we opened and it was like 35 degrees outside.
Oh my gosh, yeah, it was dying in the theatre, weren't you? And I always ask, because anything to do with live theatre, I have huge respect for it, and
definitely.
Also a fear. I get so nervous before like live if I've already do anything live. How do you deal with nerves, or do you get nerves, or how do you like?
I don't know, really, because usually I could be quite annoying, I suppose, because I just get really excited before the show. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
Whereas with this, because Quinton is quite, he needs to be quite commanding, So when we start already on stage, when the audience come in, three of us are already on doing various
ready
things.
To roll, yeah.
So then I get to leave and then come back on and make a big entrance. Mm-hmm. So actually, in terms of nerves, that's okay because I don't have to do anything as the audience come in. There's nothing set. Mm-hmm. And then I get to have a big, I'm here. And because of the kind of character it is, I get to put my stamp on it straight away. Whereas Shauna Riley and Max Panks, who play Keith and Nat, they have to play it far more straight because they're just in their living room at the start and eating pasta, you know, so they just have to play it differently, whereas I can play it up and like really lean into the audience to kind of shout those nerves away, basically.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
But I know the show quite well now.
Oh yeah,
I did it already.
Second run, so you're a little bit,
I'm more excited about just getting out there and, you know, singing some songs.
And has anything gone wrong with the run?
Good question.
Like, is there?
The last says yes. There's fun things. I mean, one of the things which, okay, I'll just say it. The other night, so because we're now, you know, we've done the show. I think it's about our 10th show tonight. So because we're getting quite used to it, and Shauna did the show before as well, so we did it together. She's done it many times, but there's a golden microphone. Which is used quite a lot, of course. And it just went missing. As in, it had been on stage. We knew it was on stage. And I turn around to pick it up, and it's not there. And I have to give it to someone. Luckily, I have another mic anyway.
Yeah.
But we're then thinking, as the scene, everything's going on, the audience have no idea. And I'm going, where could it be? Where the fuck is it
gone? Where's the golden microphone?
And I realise that it slipped down the back of the couch.
Oh. As everything does in life.
So then it's playing a game of when do I next sit on the couch and how can I get my hand rammed down the back of the couch to then rummage for it? So that it doesn't look like, oh,
I've
Luke's there looking for his prop. Exactly, you know? But it turned out okay. It was just, there was a lot of looks of me because everyone assumed when we went off stage and we were chatting about it, everyone assumed that I just took it. As if I was like, no, no, guys.
I did assume you.
Yeah, exactly. Just like sabotaging as if I don't have enough to do in the show. I'm like, no, like, I will take the mic now.
It's like cheeky. But,
yeah. That is reminding me. Have you seen The Play That Goes Wrong?
Yes, my friend's in it at the moment, actually.
I absolutely adore that play. I've seen it about 4 times because I rave about it and then people want to come with me and I'm like, oh, fuck it, I'll see it again. So I've seen it, like, literally the box office are like, you again. Yeah. Okay.
Actually, I'm going to see it with my parents. My parents live in California and they're coming over to see the show on the 15th and they just booked tickets for us to go.
That's amazing.
My mate Sean Carey is an understudy there, so I think he's doing it tonight.
That just reminded me because that play is all about obviously things going wrong and it's like, I think it's just extra funny. Anyone who's ever been involved in sort of theatre or performance or anything like that, backstage or front of house or on the stage, you're going to get like an extra level of hilarity because you've been there in that moment. And it's that panic, you see that brilliant panic when you go to reach for a prop and it is not there, and then you see literally the thought of, do I just pretend that there's an invisible prop or do I use something else
so
in exchange
true.
For that prop?
So true.
And you got about 3 seconds to decide. It's like, dun, 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 I'm just going to pretend that this chair is in fact a spoon.
But that's what makes it great. You know what I mean? Like, that's the bit love because it's that panic on stage and then the five of us all on stage are going, right, let's figure this one out, shall we?
Yeah, you can work together. It's like, don't panic, and we're all going to communicate with our eyebrows and make sure that we all land. Yeah, it's brilliant.
I love it.
That's what I love about theatre. So, guys, if you're just listening in right now, we are talking about brand new. What music is definitely musical, isn't it?
It's rock. It's inspired by 60s, 70s, 80s. It's huge. It's a huge sound.
Definitely get down to Tristan Bates Theatre. And it's on until the 29th of July. Mm-hmm. Ooh, day before my birthday.
Wow.
Ooh, thinking if anyone's listening, Mom.
Your birthday present.
Want to get my birthday present? Brilliant. And you've already had your press night. You've already done that and
we
got
have
that
indeed,
out of the way.
Yeah.
So you're well into the run now. So, yeah, all the best for the rest of the show and break a leg.
Thank you very much.
Thanks so much for coming down. Jeez. And, you know, talking about, like, yogurt and penises and stuff.
Oh,
so
my God,
that's brilliant.
Again.
Pleasure. I mean, if I wasn't here, I'd just be talking about it with someone else. So
exactly.
It's fine.
Same, bro.
You know what I mean? We're just taking it to another level by putting it on live radio. We're talking about what you're actually thinking.
Yeah,
let's not lie
you know,
here.
Guys.
Right, we're going to go back to a little bit more of my movie soundtrack. I'm going to go for a bit of Billy Joel.
Nice.
80s, considering, you know, you guys doing 80s, we'll do 80s. So we're going to do Moving Out. We're going to come back with our next guest on Back Room Chill.
sack. Is that all you get for your money? And it seems such a waste of time. If that's what it's all about, Mama, if that's moving up, then I'm moving out. Out.
Welcome back. We're nearly halfway through the show. How are you finding it, Carl?
Amazing. This is so fun. I love it.
You're doing brilliantly,
darling.
Brilliantly.
Stop it.
We have our third guest in the studio, so a huge welcome to Elham. And you're here to talk about your BAFTA-nominated movie.
Star.
So I'm a producer and also a programmer. I have these two different hats.
Okay.
And so A Syrian Love Story is a film I made. It was finished 2 years ago. It followed the journey of a family from Syria from 2009 until today. And we didn't know at the beginning of the film that it would become a story about a refugee family, but that's something that
happened. For sure, because that's all, it's all kind of evolved, doesn't it, with the whole Syrian situation.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So when did you start filming again? It was
2009. So at that time, Syria wasn't really in the kind of international spotlight in the same way as it is now. In fact, when we finished the film, it really wasn't in that place either. So it charts this whole journey, and it sees a reality at a point where the country was very much, as it still is, you know, under authoritarian rule, but at a point where it wasn't at all possible to protest on the streets. And so the starting point was, the husband was looking after four kids alone, and his wife was in prison for speaking out against the regime. And throughout the course of the film, we see things develop. I mean, the revolution starts, which means that people start openly protesting in the streets, and she gets released. And at this point, it's the first time she's ever seen anyone else actively, publicly protesting. And a lot of things happen until the end of the film. It's a completely crazy,
I'd imagine,
unexpected journey.
And logistically filming, did you come up against any sort of big roadblocks that you had to get over to film as the country sort of got more and more intense with its situation? Did you find that impacted
filming?
Yeah,
I mean, so the film's director, Sean McAllister, had been making films in the Middle East for the last 10 years. He'd made two films in Iraq, both under Saddam and after Saddam's fall.
Okay.
So he was, you know, he'd spent a lot of time in the Middle East, and he was actively looking for, you know, he knew Syria was a totalitarian regime, and it's something that people didn't talk about. Mm. He wanted to get under the skin of that, so it did involve filming outside of, you know, the norm, as it were. There were a lot of journalists in Syria at that time, but people weren't necessarily presenting the same picture as what Sean was interested in finding out about.
Mm.
So, you know, he's a one-man band with a small camera.
And how did the BAFTA nomination come about? Was that always a goal, or was that just a surprise ending
to
the project?
That was definitely a surprise ending to the project. I mean, when we finished the film in 2015, it was before the refugee crisis as we know it now. So it wasn't, you know, in the UK there was no interest to distribute it. It was felt to be too much of a risk. It wasn't really telling a story that people felt was important at that time. And I decided that it was a really important story. We'd spent 6 years working on it. And we had a responsibility, I guess, to the family also within the film. And so we booked a number of cinemas ourselves. And it kind of coincided with the picture of little Aylan Cordy washed up on the shore.
Oh, my gosh.
Just
a
couple of weeks before. And this completely changed people's perspectives about the refugee situation and what that means. And they, you know, people just became very hungry to find out what was going on and try to understand it. It was screened two days in a row on the BBC, so BBC 4, and the next day on BBC
Amazing.
1. So we had this, you know, from being a kind of, you know, independent documentary that had a specific kind of expected life, it went to being film that was seen by about 2 million people just in
in
September alone. So I think that's very much where the idea, well, the BAFTA nomination was for myself and the director as a kind of breakthrough.
Mm.
It was a, what was it for? I think it was called something like breakthrough something. Outstanding debut, that's what it was.
Oh, amazing.
Standing.
That's lovely. A nice title.
I know, it's quite nice.
Yeah, like an outstanding debut.
Yes.
And if people would like to, if they're interested, they'd like to see A Syrian Love Story, where would they be able to best access this movie now?
So A Syrian Love Story, it's on the BFI player, it's on iTunes, it's on Netflix in the UK.
Oh, amazing.
And it's been screening, you know, consistently over the last 2 years. We've screened it in universities all over the country. We've screened it at festivals all over the country. And I think what's still so incredibly moving about it is that people write to us almost weekly still to say that it's changed everything that they thought about refugees.
I have to be a fan here, guys. Please go and watch the film. It's such a beautiful concept. And honestly, just from me to you. Yeah, it was lovely. Seriously. Thank you for documenting that. The world needs to see things like that because they're not seen, they're not spoken about. So.
Thank you.
Yeah, guys, go watch that.
I think that's one of the best ways at the moment to the media, I think there's so much distortion about what's shown, what's hidden, what's not, especially there's like mainstream media and then there's online media and social media and news and stuff because there's so many like fake articles or
so
things
many.
Like, yeah, and so I think that film, especially documentary film in particular, but also mainstream film, it is like the way to reach somebody and actually put like a genuine truth out there, basically, without it being...
Well, with this film, you follow a family over 5 years. You see these kids grow up. You know, there's so much that's relatable in it. It's basically a family story, and the backdrop is political. The backdrop is the fact that they become refugees. But, you know, the heart of it is that it's a marriage breakdown. And there's something about that that's so intensely relatable that, you know, it doesn't matter where you're from and who you are and, you know, whatever age and what your experiences are, you've been disappointed by someone in your life for sure. And so when you see these scenes, you can relate to them so intensely. And then you think that's compounded by all these other realities. And that's what it is that really makes it, I think, so relatable.
And are you still in contact with the family?
Good question.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
We're in touch. They're all in France now, if that's not too much of a spoiler. And they're all well, and they use the film as a way to also talk about the situation in Syria. and give platforms to you know, speak about the reality of what they lived through.
Are they still together? No spoilers, but they're still together. You can nod or shake.
Well, it's a spoiler.
We don't want to spoil it. No spoilers. And it's going to be part of the... Is it pronounced Shabak?
Shabak. So this Shabak film in particular isn't part of Shabak, but very much the thought process behind having made this film has informed how Shabak was curated.
And
so,
yeah, if anyone doesn't know what Shabak is, it's London's largest festival of contemporary Arab culture.
Exactly. So Shabak means window, so it looks to be a window onto the Arab world from contemporary Arab artists from all over the region. And, you know, I curated the film programme in knowledge of how much misunderstanding there was about the Arab world. Yeah. And Syria in particular has become incredibly visible on our screens.
Yeah.
And it felt to me that it was very sad. Not that it's not necessary to see some images. It was very sad that the country is only being related to through the idea of destruction.
So true.
And there's something about, you know, Aleppo, for example. Aleppo is like the jewel of the region. It was like the Paris of Europe. You know, it was known for its soap, for example.
Yeah.
And I would love for people to know that about the city and to really understand what it means, therefore, that it's been destroyed. Or to kind of reflect on that reality in a different way. So the whole program has been created around these two ideas of understanding conflict in a more personalized way, I suppose, understanding conflict in a different perspective, and the idea of imagine a future, because after the reality of what's happening in the region, also the idea of what do artists from the region imagine as the next step, the future.
Well, the best way is to educate and relate. So, film is one of the best mediums to do that. And if you guys are interested in checking out the Shabak Festival, it's screens at the Barbican and the Institut Francais first half of July.
Definitely,
so that'll be the place to check out the website there to go and see. Because I think it's super important, especially now as tensions are rising. And
yes,
I feel that.
That's what I was going to say.
This is the time.
God.
Because I've even felt like a little spill of it, because my boyfriend's Arab and we're on the internet a lot, and I have noticed that we do get, there are the occasional really savage hate comments and things, and I can see that it's someone just purely uneducated and they have never been exposed to sort of the other side of the coin, the other side of the story, the other side,
or it's just recognizing that, you know, there is more. The Arab world has an incredibly diverse and interesting culture. And to realise that we're not talking about people who are different and other, but people who are exactly like us, who find themselves in extraordinary circumstances. And definitely film can be an amazing way to see that.
To do that.
And also see, the I don't know, inventiveness or humour with which artists try to reflect on that.
Mm.
So I don't know where your boyfriend... Where's your boyfriend from?
He's a big mixture. He's Palestinian, Lebanese, Algerian.
Okay.
So he's kind of a mixture of all the middle.
So I have a question for you off the back of that.
Okay.
You've obviously seen a zoomed-in version of a very personalised people and relationship. And as a world, it isn't perfect at the moment. I mean, I'm just curious to see, what would you say is a way that we can move forward and really strive to understand, because you've had that personal experience with people. What would you say to people just to raise their overintelligence? How would we create a change in the world is a better question from your experiences that you've seen.
I think there's something around critical thinking, so actually questioning the things that are being relayed as simplified messages. And thinking about the other side of the story, thinking about, I think anything that tends towards dehumanizing. Is really problematic. You know, there's no need to actually, this idea of humanizing people is kind of crazy, because it suggests that in the first place that, you know, there's the assumption that some people aren't human.
True.
As well.
Oh,
do you know what I mean?
I would say that not being afraid to spark conversations with someone and just asking questions. I have two friends who I have literally just hounded them with questions about one girl I used to go to school with, and one's my boyfriend's sister. I just hound them with questions about their culture, their religion. I'm like, actually, I've got a question about Islam, because all I know is, kind of from like movies.
Yeah.
So just from your experience, and then I've gone, oh, I see. So it's like that. And I realised just how many similarities. And so I think just find a friend of a friend and just ask them loads of questions. And I assure you, they like won't be.
Definitely.
They're actually like more than happy to tell you.
Yeah,
they're like, please, this is, we're so fed up with the media's portrayal or movies portrayal. Please let us like, you know, just speak to people. Yeah. It's the same with anything.
I agree. And I suppose it's also knowing that one person doesn't represent everyone, for example.
For sure.
So, you know.
That is so true. Say it again,
thing.
Girl. Say
yeah,
it again.
One person
does not represent everyone, okay?
For sure.
Yeah, so.
Thank you so much for coming in
Thanks
and speaking to
me.
Us. It's about a Syrian love story, which you can check out Netflix, iTunes.
Go and check that out.
All over the place. So thank you so much for coming in. I'm going to pop... a bit of Queen.
Yeah.
This is from the Baby Driver soundtrack. It's kind of like the finale of the whole movie. And I actually, Queen's one of my favourite bands, and I never come across this song before. Thank you.
Freddie Mercury, Iranian.
Ah, yes. Ooh, it all links in.
Lovely.
It all links in.
I'm going to say that I meant
not
to
an
do
Arab,
that.
But still. Yeah. I'm Iranian, so that works.
Here's a bit of Queen. Now, this is Batroy and Chill.
Robinson, it's Kent Jones. And usually I like to be in the front, but right now this is Back Row and Chill.
Woo! Kamal's face on
the What's popping? It's Kamal Seeley on Back Row and Chill. I like that. I like that one. Ooh, goddamn.
We are on a roll. It's just gone 5 p.m. on Back Row and Chill. Yeah. FUBAR Radio. I'm really excited to talk to our next guest.
Proper hats.
This concept is just amazing. We are talking to Isabel and Dora from Shitface Showtime.
Hiya.
Hello.
Huge welcome, and please let us know what Shitface Showtime is.
Trust me.
Yeah. hand over. We do musicals.
Yeah.
This year we're doing The Wonderful Wizard of Oz.
Lovely.
And 4 hours before the show, mm-hmm. one of our cast members starts drinking alcohol.
I love that.
And
I love it.
When it comes to the show, they are allowed to do whatever the hell they like on stage, and it's up to the rest of us to get through it and see what happens.
Oh my god,
that's nuts!
I mean,
that's so sick.
Is this a spin-off of the Drunk Shakespeare?
Yeah, we're from the same company.
Okay, yeah, because I've heard legends about that show. That's amazing.
Yeah. So they've been going for 8 years, and then we're like the babies of the group, and we joined about 2 years ago and started doing musicals, so more dancing, more singing. That's lots amazing. More to go wrong.
Yeah, a lot
basically.
More steps to get muddled up.
Yeah.
And do you encourage the audience to drink along with you?
Oh, gosh.
That's a good question.
Yeah.
Always.
I mean, always drink responsibly.
Why The Wizard of Oz particularly? Was that whose idea was that, and where did that come out of the bag?
Well, when we started, we wanted to do old-fashioned musicals because we just think it's more funny when there's a higher height to fall from. And Wizard of Oz is like a classic in that way.
Oh, yeah, everyone's expecting. They know what's about to should come.
Everyone knows it. Everyone did it at school or whatever. And there are songs that everyone knows in there. And there's also a lot that the drunk can play with the plot. Like, so we had our preview shows in Brighton a couple weeks ago, and the Tin Man decided that he didn't want to find a heart. He wanted to find a boyfriend. So for the rest of the show, we had to go through the audience trying to find a boyfriend for the Tin Man and like figuring out how to weave that into the storyline.
Oh, that's amazing.
Yeah.
So you guys, your improv skills must be pretty sharp.
No, that's what I was just about to say.
So you don't panic and just...
I mean, yeah, you've got to be prepared for just the most crazy things.
One of my favourites actually was when it was one of Izzy's drunk nights. And
Izzy?
And she... Do you know what I'm about to say? No.
Oh,
she...
Could be.
Have you ever done this thing with an iPhone where you get your iPhone and you ask Siri to read out a text that's got emojis in it?
No.
Oh,
because
it is
Siri reads out emojis and he literally goes, what's an
it'll
example?
Be like baby angel, smiling pile of poo.
Yeah. You know, it literally is called smiling pile of poo. Yeah. Or there's one that goes like Asian ideograph meaning good homework. And stuff like that. And Izzy like got Siri and held him up to her mic so that the whole like literally everyone in the audience could just hear Siri reading out these messages.
Oh my god.
And like how the hell do you weave that into a musical?
Obviously,
do you know what I mean?
Amazing.
All the other cast members were like seething. Yeah. What the hell do we do from here?
Izzy, what are you doing? Yeah, that's pretty wild to throw that card in there. That's I think that's exciting because when I go to a show, I take on performers' nerves, even though I'm a member of the audience.
So true.
I remember when I first went to see Matilda, they came out and they made an announcement to say that it was the Matilda's first ever night, and I wish they'd never told me because the whole thing I was like, "Come on, go!"
Like a mum, like, "Oh, come on!"
Yeah, I was feeling nervous for her, and like she was absolutely bossed it. She was fine. She was like walking backwards, singing on stage and stuff, and I was just like, "What?" But I get that. I get a bit nervous for performers. Yeah. So this show, I'd be there. Like I'd be getting crazy. Cramps and all kinds of tenseness.
Do you know what?
Like, oh, it's gonna happen.
People have said, like, when they've come to see the show, that like when they see the drunk, they like feel really kind of like mother, like maternal towards them. Like afterwards, like, oh, how are they getting?
Well,
they just want to be behind them.
We've had a lot of people like make friends as well from the drunk shows, like Alan. Everyone always fancies Alan after his drunk shows.
All the boys
we
always
have this, like,
get approached.
Yeah, they really do. Like, people always fancy the boys.
Go on,
and
lads.
They get like DMs on Twitter and stuff.
Sliding.
Like, hey, saw your. Yeah,
we're there. Like, oh, okay.
See you then.
Great for you, babe.
Yeah.
So, what do you drink before you go on? What's your drink of the show?
Well, it's different for each person. I love Prosecco. I also love Sauvignon Blanc. Yeah. Okay. Not a drink of choice. Izzy, you like rum, don't you?
Like a bit of rum.
Yeah, I'm a rum girl. I'm a rum girl.
Yes, wow. bit of Coke and rum.
It's just like whatever you drink to get yourself into the party mood, really.
Ciroc.
Yeah.
Cool. And a VIP Ciroc.
Has anyone ever got ill mid-performance? Is there
been a vomiting?
No.
Okay. No. We give out a precautionary bucket at the beginning of the show, so, you know, We've got all bases covered, guys.
Wow. Yeah. I just had an idea for a teetotal version of the show. Okay, I'm just going to throw it out there.
Let's hear it.
So all the cast drinks a lot of water from 4 hours before the show, and you're not allowed to pee. So the entire show is based on people needing to perform but desperately needing the toilet. Because I think that might bring a whole new energy.
Oh, it would bring energy. That would be
shit face. It would be shit faced. It would be like, what would it be?
Piss holding.
It's
all
in
the name.
We're working on it. It's on the board. But I think there could be something in that, because you know, like in Joey from Friends, in that episode where he goes to audition, he really needs the loo, and he ends up nailing the performance because everything he does is out of desperation.
Yeah,
like, don't you think that's so true though? Have you ever gone to an audition and you really need a wee, and you go in the room and like suddenly you don't need a wee anymore? You just
where does it go?
I don't know. But actually, we have so many drunk performers who before the show they're like, I really need a wee, and we're like, you actually can't go now, it's too late, you'll just have to go in the middle of the show. And so much of the time they don't end up going because they get on stage and they're like, I'm the star, like,
it just goes from their mind. It's weird.
I do think that I have felt that, you know, when you go to the gym and you think you need a wee and then suddenly you don't, I think you do reabsorb. If anyone's like a doctor out there listening, like, what happens to your wee when you need to go and then you don't need to go? Where does it go?
Explain the biology.
Exactly.
No idea.
Tweet us in at FUBAR Radio. Where does your wee go? Or email in chill@fubarradio.com. Please help us, because I'm stumped.
I'm stumped.
I'm stumped with that. You know, same with poo as well. I've been there.
Okay. And next question.
Where does the poo go?
Where does the smiling poo emoji go?
So how long, if people are like, yeah, I want to go and see a shit-faced Wizard of Oz, where is it on and how do people go and see it?
So we're on at the Leicester Square Theatre.
Nice.
We're on we're on every Sunday at 8 p.m. through July, so we're on from this Sunday coming to the 23rd, and then we'll be at Edinburgh Fringe at the Cow Barn Med Quad from 10 p.m. for the entire month.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of boozing coming
up. That's going to be very expensive. Is the alcohol put in the budget of the show?
That's a good question.
Yeah, we get drunk for work.
How
it's amazing.
How do we get involved in this show, you know? After sliding in. After sliding in.
Honestly, the first time that we went alcohol shopping for the show, how funny was it? We were just walking around Asda, like, and we'll have more beer, and we'll have more Prosecco. Here's the company card. Like, it's literally amazing. You know those moments where you're like, is this my life? Is this my life?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And what about the hangovers though? Because you're going to be like drunk and then performing and drunk and performing. Yeah.
So, you know what? Actually, I get more hungover on a normal night than I do doing. Don't shake your head.
But it's true that you do. It's true that, I know, it just annoys me that you do, because Izzy wakes up the next day after her drunk show and she's like, off to yoga at 10 a.m. Like, I wake up the next day after my drunk show and I need a fry up.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
But I feel like we look at, because after the show you have enough, like, there's people looking after you, feeding you flapjacks.
That's true.
Cheesy chips. And water and stuff. And, like, you know, when you go out yourself, you're not going to look after yourself as well. I get home, usually just neck a cup of water and get to bed. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Just dive for the duvet.
Yeah. So actually,
I don't get drunk, guys, so I wouldn't know. Christian upbringing.
The holy wine. Well, this is it's such a cool concept. I love it. Has anything gone wrong? Like, what's the sort of the worst kind of, like, ow, shit?
We had, in our first year in Edinburgh, like, the boys kept on trying to outdo each other when they were drinking, which is not something that we encourage now. We, like, try and move away from that. But, like, I think one boy just got too hot one show and ended up taking his shirt off. And then it just progressed, and we basically ended up having one of our cast members entirely strip, like even take his pants off, and he was just like holding his
genitalia.
Yeah, and he was literally like climbing over the audience, like totally naked,
balls and face. Yeah. I can imagine.
So
wow, some people were like that though.
Yeah, but. And we've also, I mean, Shitface Shakespeare have had one a cast member order like 20 Dominoes to the theatre once, and they turned up after the show had finished. So then the cast just had like 20
eating it
Dominoes.
For the rest of the week.
So you're allowed to take it to literally wherever you want to take it.
Oh, the madder the better.
That's
definitely.
Amazing.
That is.
I want that job.
I want that job.
And just lastly, how do you know if you're sort of drunk enough to perform? Is there a certain level of drunk that is like, she's stage ready?
we get used to how each of the cast members kind of react to the alcohol. Because there's the alcohol and then there's the adrenaline of going, okay, you're allowed to do the hell you like in front of 400 people and obviously you're pissed, like the adrenaline goes through the roof, so it's like a combination of that and the drinking. Do you know what I mean?
So it really depends from person to person. Like for me, I don't really seem that drunk until I get to, I don't know, because obviously I'm drunk, so I don't know myself. But I think I seem a lot more drunk when I've got to the theatre, because it suddenly hits me and you go like, oh my god.
Yeah, totally.
Whereas like for Izzy, you can normally tell physically in how she is. So not in a bad way, just like you know, you can see when she gets a bit tipsy and that with loads and loads of sober people, you know. So but we learn, like a lot of our cast members, we basically like hire our mates because we know how they are as drinkers, and we get used to how they'll react to it, and we can like really monitor them, and we want to look after them and they want to look after us. And
I mean, I struggle to like remember my lines and where I need to go when I'm sober.
Girl,
so if I was drunk, I'd be all over the place. I'd just start doing a whole nother play or something.
Yeah. Listen, I don't know what I'd do, boy.
Well, this is amazing. So just to recap, it's Shit Face Showtime.
Watch that shit.
The Wonderful Wizard of Oz, and you can get it at Leicester Square Theatre, so check it out. I'm super excited for you guys.
Yes.
Well, thanks so much for coming in.
Thanks for having us.
This is making me want to go have a drink and like
for
one person show. Don't know if anyone would pay for it.
I'll pay for it, Jay.
Yeah.
I'll come along.
Teamwork.
Right, let's go for a little bit more music. I'm going to go for this is Young MC. It's from the Baby Driver soundtrack. I'm obsessed with this movie. You've got to go see it. It's absolutely brilliant.
Oh, I've heard good things.
Baby Driver. This is a little bit of Muse Kit from it on Back Row and Chill.
Rhymes ever made by man are going into this mic written by this hand, are coming out of this mouth made by this tongue. I tell you now, my man, my name is Young, but so you think that it's your destiny to get the best of me, but I suggest to be quiet, bro, don't even try. From the east and west of me, taking it and never breaking it, or even shaking it, grooving it and always moving it, cause I'm not faking it, pulling out rhymes like books off the shelf. Born in England, raised in Holland, thought I go for myself. This is stone cold rhyming, no frills, no fluffs, and it's no accident that these rhymes sound tough. I'm going off, baby, there's no turning back. I'm on your TV, on your album, cassette, and 8-track, and when the show is finally finished, I'll be taking my bow. My name is Young, and yo, I got no how. You know what I'm saying? I got no how. Party people, I got no how. I kick it just like this. I got juice like the president. I'm making rappers hesitant. Invite me to your house and I'll be chilling like a resident. Yes, cause I'm that type of man, cause I make myself at home no matter where I am. I got it rolling like thunder, making y'all wonder why I'm on top with all the other rappers under. I make no errors, mistakes or blunders. It's like a wedding, let no man put asunder. My name is Young and see, I like to rock right well, cause when I get up on the mic I just release my spell. It's no hocus pocus, I just get you into focus and swarm all over you just like a horde of locusts. Smooth operator, female persuader, spot a fly girl and in a week I'm on a dater. I got the kind of style for the here and the now, and I can do it cause I got no how. You know what I'm saying? I got no how. Party people, I got no how. Bust it.
Bust it. cause I know what I'm doing. I treat them like government gum and start chewing. I spit them out when the flavor's gone, and I repeat the chewing process till the break of dawn. Cause I'm tough like a bone, sly like Stallone, rocking and clocking on the microphone. Smooth like a mirror and hearts that strike terror. Rhymes like runs and hits with no errors. Cold like a blizzard on the mic, I am the wizard with the funky fresh rhymes coming out of my gizzard. Never sneezing, never coughing, I rock the mic often. Hard as a rock and no sign I'll soften. Making sure I get respect on my mind, rhymes connect. I start to build like a builder from an architect. Moving all around, above and under the ground. You see my face and then you hear my sound. Coming at ya with the mic in hand, I'm gonna take command just the way I plan. Cause I'm a one man band and you are my fan. Don't you understand, I'm like Superman. You're the man of steel, don't you know the deal. You better be for real, I got sex appeal. This is what I feel and this here's my vow. And now you know the brother with no how. You know what I'm saying? I got no how. And I'm chilling, never illing. In my mouth I got two feelings. Whatever, I'm on a mic, cold stone hitting over. My name is Young and seen known as the Fly Casanova. Kick it.
FUBAR Radio presents
Sticky Blood.
What were we talking about last time, Tom?
Whether Jeremy Corbyn should be Prime Minister.
Because a lot of shit's happened.
I don't think it's over yet. The positive is that a lot of the extreme things that were in their manifesto...
Have gone. Because she's realised people don't like me. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's bollocks. I feel like she's full of shit. I feel like she knows now what to put on the front. When she didn't know what to put on the front before. Yeah. Yeah. Whereas now she's like, oh, put that in the front window.
Yeah. I'm hearing, like, dirty. I'm hearing words like dirty.
Yeah.
Dirty meetings.
Dirty
duppies. Daily duppies.
Don't look back.
Every Monday, Sticky Blood from 6 p.m. FUBAR Radio.
Ooh, what an interesting show.
Lovely.
This is Back Row and Chill. We're nearly at the three quarter way through.
Oh, man.
We're flying high, coming into lands, but not yet. We've got one more guest, or two guests on the show. This week, TJ, who often co-hosts with me here on the show, he went down and he met the actors from the new movie All Eyes on Me, which is the biopic true story of Tupac.
Have you seen
the trailer?
I need to watch that.
I saw
that
the trailer this week and it's super, super interesting. He met actor Demetrius Shipp Jr. who plays Tupac, which I was like, oh my God, that guy has got balls to take on such an iconic role.
Course.
Especially so, it's still relatively soon after he died. It's like, oh.
It's going to get watched like that.
And
like
Kat Graham, who plays Jada Pinkett Smith.
Oh, Jada Pinkett Smith.
Kamal was just... overwhelmed
I'm getting bad to myself now.
The fact that Jada Pinkett Smith dated Tupac and now Will Smith.
That.
So that's a lot of, yeah.
God, so what you said, go on.
That's a lot of prolific dick that she got herself there. Well done, Jada. They're both very gorgeous men. This is the true and untold story of the rapper, actor, poet and activist Tupac. So this was TJ meeting the cast from that movie. Here we go.
Back Row and Chill on FUBAR Radio.
All right. So Demetrius and Kat, how are you doing?
We're great. We love the UK.
Oh, man. And the UK loves you. Well, I certainly love you after watching
thank
the film.
You.
And I say, absolutely amazing performance by you both.
Thank you.
All right. So let's get into the questions. This being an autobiographical film, all right, how was it different to prepare to play a real person as an actor? Because, you know, usually when you're acting, you're playing like a fictional character. So you kind of have creative direction as to where you want to make the character go or how you think they should be. But obviously, the characteristics and mannerisms are based on real people. So how did you go about preparing for that?
Well, me personally, I've never played anybody else, so I wouldn't know how to. But just doing a great deal of research, you know, studying the people. Myself, I just watch Tupac all day.
Mm-hmm.
I would record myself, you know, learning Tupac's interviews,
okay,
saying it with, you know, with him, you know, like next to the TV, I record the Tupac interview, saying it and trying to get it down,
get the mannerisms down,
cadence and a whole lot of stuff.
Yeah, I really honed in on your mannerisms. And you know, like, he always looked through his eyebrows.
Yeah.
And I know you had that steely look, man. I'm watching you, bro. Very well done, I must say. And yourself?
We're fortunate that we had a lot of interviews to look at, and we had movies, and, you know, Jada had done a pretty good body of work by the time, you know, she was in her late 20s. So, you know, I was able to kind of tap into that.
Yeah.
Look at interviews. There weren't that many of her speaking on Pac, but the stuff that I did see was pretty emotional, and there was a lot of love there. So it was really important that I honored that.
Yeah. Did you get to, like, maybe meet some of the real people? Of course, you never got to meet Park, but did you get to meet some of the real people that were in the film, you know?
Well, I met the Outlaws, which was crazy. I don't want to ruin the film, but, you know, when the Outlaws was in the final scene, and it just, like, that's the part that kind of broke me, because, you know, these guys really, you know, they worked with him, and they were, they grew up with him, you know what I'm saying? So that was hard. For me, even just as a person, as a fan of music, and man, just watching them be a part of this was crazy. I mean, LT, obviously, he worked with Pac. Yeah. He's not just like the producer or the creator of the project. He's a really renowned music producer and worked and, you know, and even produced over at Death Row and produced for Snoop even told me, which I didn't even know until I did his cooking show with Martha Stewart a few weeks ago, that LT had done a bunch of records for him.
Okay.
So, you know, he's been in the game for a really long time and wanted to bring his personal touch and his personal, you know, experiences and love for his friend to the big screen.
Mm. How was it recreating some of those famous scenes that Puck was in and Jada had been in, like reliving those moments, especially yourself? You got to recreate some of the album covers and stuff like that and the music videos. Yeah. How was that?
Oh, that was fun. You know, the music videos was a great time. You know, I remember like the day on set when I did the same song. That was dope. You know, so they had all people come in. I had the outfit.
Yeah.
It was like one of the I think it might have been like one of the last days before we had like a little break or something. But it was just cool, man. And then recreating like the juice scene was very, very important. That was a little nerve-wracking going into it.
You know, it was one of the most fun moments is just like being on set and seeing Meech run around. He'd like show up in that gold dashiki, and then next thing I know, he's got like the Gumby, and next thing I know, he's bald, and it's just like, I don't know which Pac I'm meeting that day. You know, I go to lunch, I come back, he's like in a suit. You know, it's just like, it was really, really fun for me to watch him just completely jump to different years, and he just did these time jumps so quick and had the mannerisms and had the attitude and the innocence that Demetrius showed when he was younger to like when he was a bit, you know, after, you know, after,
you know,
prison.
What I just,
that's
somewhat of a spoiler.
What is
but
it?
I really wish that the pizza scene.
Oh yeah, well maybe that'll be in the DVD.
Yeah, they have to. That was so dope.
So it's interesting because you get a deeper understanding, because I think when people think of Pac, sometimes they just think of thug life. They think of the tats. They think of, you know, I get around, and they, you know, California love, death. You know, they don't. You know, Meech brings so much vulnerability and such character to Pac that you really like, you fall in love with Pac all over again.
I really enjoyed your scenes together. Like,
thank you.
And me talking, too.
And, and you know, like the poem scene. Did you get much time to rehearse together and build a relationship? Because you handled Jada like really delicately. You know, I think you really captured her like beautiful. And that was so good. That relationship, it was just so real. Like, I forgot that I wasn't watching, you know, Pac and Jada. Like, do you know what I'm saying? It was just crazy. It was such a beautiful scene. So how did you get to build on that relationship? Or did you get to much rehearsal?
We always had that relationship even the second we met.
Certainly, that was so crazy. I honestly can't remember a person recall at all, like meeting a person and becoming like instant like friends. You know what I'm saying? Like me and Kat, that's what happened. Okay. Like when we met, it was like we was just good. You know what I'm saying? Like we hung out a couple times and.
But at a certain point, you can't just create energy. Like you can't. Like you can try your hardest and be the best actor in the world, but. You know, we just wanted to do the best we could to bring our friendship to the screen, too.
So just quickly. So in the UK, we have a style of rap called grime. Have you heard of it?
Hell yeah.
Yeah, you like a bit of grime? Okay, you haven't. You need to get into some grime, yeah? Okay, I'm going to give you some grime rappers. Anyway, so there's a guy called Getz. He's got a song called Top 3 Selected. So this question is based on his song. So who are your top 3 selected rappers? Now you've played the movie, you can't get fired, so you don't have to necessarily say Tupac. But
top 3 rappers
ever? Who
are your
top 3 rappers ever, quickly?
Yes,
go. On the spot. Pressure.
Tupac.
Yeah.
Jay-Z.
Yeah.
Kendrick Lamar.
Okay, and?
Most Def. Not in any order. Obviously, okay. Pac, and I don't know. I really like groups, right? So I love like the Roots, and I really love Far Side and Diggable Planets. I could just, yeah, so just, I don't know, old school hip hop. I don't know. I'm on a timer. Gotta go. Bye.
Okay. Thank you, guys. Thank you very much. It's been great interviewing you. I had so much more questions, and I could like interview you for many more hours and watch that movie for many more hours.
Maybe come to this Q&A tonight.
Yeah, come.
Brilliant, guys. And yeah, I'm going to definitely
hook
you
up. We'd love to see you.
Oh, man, that'd be great. And maybe I'll hook you up with some, you know, training shops and so on and so forth and some grime music. Guys, have a great day.
Yes.
Thank you very much. Have a good
awesome.
Day, guys. Thank you.
Oh, I
I've like, yeah, been busting a few moves. Embarrassingly, yes. In the studio, the cameras were on. I forgot.
Oh no!
Right, we are coming into our film review section of the show. Lucy Patterson,
hello,
is back.
Back again.
Back again.
Yep.
This is part of the show where we just review what we've seen, what we've been watching, loving, hating. Ooh. Online and cinema. Anywhere really, Netflix. Yeah. Whatever, TV, the old school television. Exactly. Yeah, what have we guys seen? Anyone want to kick off with
Well, I sort of delved into Amazon this week. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, it's been sitting there for a while, my Prime account, and I haven't really bothered to look what's on there. And I know of a couple of shows, you know, Transparent and American Gods and things like that. I thought, okay, I'm going to look for their original shows and see what I can find. And I found a couple of absolute gems. Completely different ends of the spectrum, both of them. But the first one was, it's a show called Red Oaks. Ooh. It's actually been out a couple of years now, I think. And I think they're bringing out season three this year. It's Craig Roberts is the star. He is a filmmaker in his own right. Yeah. He made Submarine and he made something with Emil Hirsch and I can't remember what it was called, but he's amazing. It's like, it's only a half hour show. Mm. It's American. And it's like this lovely mixture of like Caddyshack and all of the teen movies you've ever seen. It's set in the 80s.
Oh my God, I'm all over it.
It's so funny. It's that dry humour mixed with some slapstick stupidity that just, that mixture works so well. It's got something for everyone in it.
Yeah.
And it's got like the who's who of 90s comedy in it. Paul Reiser and Tate Donovan and loads. There's loads of different faces that you'll see when you start watching
it. And I'll remember the face, yeah.
Yeah, and it's set in a country club and it's his summer off from college. And it's just about all the things he gets up to with his girlfriend and the owner's daughter and things like that. You know, it's like a bit of a Porky's, like I said, mixed in with Caddyshack. And it's just so good. You know, they're all smoking weed and doing this and that and the other to
me
each
now,
other.
You
know,
yeah, you got me yeah.
Now. So, Red Oaks.
Yeah, it's Red really, Oaks. Really good. It's really funny. And some amazing directors, actually. And I didn't realise that until I saw the credits. You know, I didn't really do much research. I thought, okay, just watch it. Don't fill your brain with other stuff. Mm. And there were Amy Heckerling, she directed a couple of episodes. David Gordon Green, who Pineapple Express.
Oh,
you know, there were some serious people attached to this, and I can't believe I'd never heard anything about it.
Yeah, I've never heard anything about Red Oaks.
No. So that's get so on Amazon, get yourself a Prime account, and watch it. It's amazing. It's definitely binge worthy.
And you can now, because before, I think I was a bit hesitant to get a Prime account because you had to pay yearly.
But now you can pay monthly.
Now you can pay monthly. Yeah. They've, you know,
I think it's like $7.99 a month.
It's like,
and it's so worth it. Mm. So worth it. Not only can you get that forgotten birthday present the next day,
you know, Prime, you do. Oh, yeah.
And there's all vintage films on there and things. Yeah. You know, there's other channels you can get from there as well. It's amazing. I'm completely in love with it.
Lovely.
Yeah.
I'm down with that. I have been, well, I'm going to switch over to Netflix because this is what, this is, I'm so excited about this series. I'm so annoyed that I finished it all in 2 days.
Good binging though.
It's Glow on Netflix.
Oh.
Which I heard someone mentioned it, like, oh, you should watch this Glow thing. Mm. And I was like, what's
that? Actually,
about?
I think Ozzy mentioned something about that. Yeah, I don't actually know. It's wrestling, isn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, yeah. So, and what I realise is it's a true, well, dramatically true story. Yeah. There was an actual TV show in the 80s on Saturday morning TV, which was an all-female wrestling.
Brilliant.
Never heard of it. And it was called Glow, and you would win the Glow Crown. And what they did, it was all a load of silly. Well, as silly as actual wrestling is.
Well, yeah.
So they all had their own characters. And this series is about these sort of desperately failing actresses in LA in the 80s, and they decide to, the only thing they've got left is to decide to audition for this new TV series. None of them know anything about wrestling or anything like that, so they literally start from scratch. And the reason that it really caught me, one was the absolute homage to all things 80s.
Brilliant.
Soundtrack. They, whoever did the design and all the costumes and the hair, like, it wasn't like a kind of 80s style. This was the 80s. It's absolutely bang on.
I've seen a lot of promo pictures and that alone has sort of sucked me in. I'm like, I'm going to watch
brilliant.
This.
It's brilliant. So it is a comedy, and Alison Brie, who was in How to Be Single and a couple of the other sort of American comedies, she is now taking her like first lead that I've seen, a proper lead.
Yeah.
And she absolutely nails it.
Excellent.
And her comedy, she does awkward moments like brilliantly, obviously. So she's there and she's playing this actress and she desperately wants to be a real actress and she's having to be in a wrestling show and she's in the ring and she's just like, I just don't know what my, like, what's, like, my purpose is. I just need something.
What's my motivation?
Yeah, what's my motivation in this scene? And they're like, just do the fucking move. Just choke slam her. And she's just like, but what if I'm Russian? And, like, you know, it's really so good.
I love that.
Yeah. And it looks like, it does look like quite a girly show, but like I said earlier, like, my boyfriend was like, nah, I don't really fancy it. So I just had it on, and then he got gripped,
got hooked,
and then he got pissed off that I dare watch it without him. So he's like, I'm watching it too. I'm like, all right, fine. And the episodes are only sort of 25 minutes, 29 minutes.
Well, I like
long.
That. That's good because you can really just sort of get right into it.
You can do like 3-4 episodes in what would be a movie.
Yeah.
I think there's 10 episodes overall, and it's just, it's like my favourite series.
Wow.
It really makes you laugh. But then also there's drama in it because it's kind of that main Alison Brie character. It's also about her best friend. They're best friends, and then you discover that she, Alison Brie, has slept with the best friend's husband.
Oh, spoiler!
That is the, like, the premise of the
really?
And she, she turns up at the gym on the auditions to have it out with her. Ooh. In the ring, ends up getting a role on the show too.
Brilliant.
So the whole of this thing is like, she's a headliner, they're both headliners of this wrestling show, but they have actually want to kill each other because of the
well, there's her motivation.
Exactly.
Fuck her up.
But it's brilliant. So check out Glow, and a lot of the music I've been playing today has been from the soundtrack to the whole
series.
It's been brilliant.
Wow.
So I would say, I mean, Kamal, have you seen anything this week that you've been loving or hating?
You did Amazon, you did Netflix, I do mainstream cinema.
Excellent.
Transformers.
Oh, okay.
That was the movie I was trying to get into. So, and when I had my meltdown in Cineworld, that was what I was trying to go and see. So please tell me that I didn't need to go and see it because it's shit.
I got bad news, right? So the problem when you do see, like, movies, when you do more movies, it can lose the plot line and it can start to water down.
Yeah.
The humans were fighting the Transformers in this one.
Huh?
And I don't really think that you can go against metal and really... I mean, the Transformers are transforming and threatening them and the humans are standing there with guns trying to shoot
them. Yeah, right.
I'm saying, I understand about it not being real, but...
Yeah.
Bumblebee would hurt you in real life.
Well,
you know what I'm saying? Like, it was a bit... Personally, it let me down because it just wasn't real enough. I didn't like it. I didn't feel it was real enough.
Good, I'm pleased about that.
I heard rumours, though, that it was, even though it wasn't the best one, it was the funniest. What were the gags like?
You know when you're mindset and you didn't like it in general? I just wasn't because as soon as I saw them fighting the robots, I couldn't connect with it. It just didn't feel...
Sometimes you think, this film is shit and I'm not going to laugh at it.
Yeah.
For principle, more than anything.
It upset me because I had high hopes.
Yeah.
Transformers is a film I had high hopes.
How was Laura Haddock, the British actress? Because I know her.
Mm. Oh, really?
Yeah.
So oh, well, in that case, she was amazing.
Yeah,
no, she was very good, actually, to be honest.
Yeah.
But to be honest, when I see a character from the start, I like to see them through.
Yeah.
I still miss Megan Fox, even though she killed it.
Yeah.
I saw Transformers as Sam Doohickey and whatever Megan Fox is like.
Yeah. Michaela.
Yeah.
But I mean, she did do well. I mean, I haven't seen her anywhere else. I'm sure she is. But she did do really well. But for me, I have to rate that Rotten Tomatoes. I didn't really feel the Transformers, to be honest.
Okay.
Sorry, bad news, guys.
Well, that would be a...
Oh, hell no! Oh, you told me you had sound effects. What the hell? Why am I finding this out now?
I know. Okay, well, I went to see... I got invited to the, like, pre-screening of The Hitman's Bodyguard, which is Samuel L. Jackson and Ryan Reynolds. They've done a movie which all I saw was a poster, so I just went along to see, like, what is it. Now I actually can't talk too much about it because it is embargoed because it doesn't come out until August.
Spoils.
But I am going to be interviewing Samuel L. Jackson next week.
Oh, oh, honestly. Oh my god. And so, that is a sound effect.
Oh, hell no.
Oh hell no.
I press the button, guys.
Sorry. I Aruba Shaka.
Oh, hell to the no, girl. It's not that kind of radio show. I promise you that.
So it was actually really good. And it's essentially like a buddy movie between Samuel L. Jackson and Ryan Reynolds.
Is Ryan Reynolds just being Ryan Reynolds like he always is, though?
Yeah, he is. He's being a toned-down Deadpool, kind of.
Yeah, I mean, he always is, but the fact is, it's always good to watch anyway.
That's exactly what I wanted. Yeah. I was hoping that he was going to be Deadpool. And it is. It's the synopsis of the story is that it's a a bodyguard. Ryan Reynolds owns a bodyguard service.
I know what you're talking about. That film looks epic.
And yeah. Samuel Jackson is a hitman, and they obviously from two opposite sides. And it just so happens that on a job with Interpol, Ryan Reynolds has to protect Samuel Jackson, hitman, and they have history and they have beef.
Oh, brilliant!
And it is it looks really amazing. And some of the comedy, and you can't. What I liked about it is that you couldn't see where it was going. Mm. You know, in a lot of things, you're like, oh, here we go, here we go. And just as you think you know roughly where it's going, suddenly you're like, where is this film? Oh, and then that happened. Okay, right, okay.
Twisty.
So it was brilliant, and I'll be able to tell you a lot more once I've spoken to Samuel. And once
lovely.
Do you see how we're already on first?
Focus to Samuel.
First name basis.
So jealous.
All right, well, I have got a... I've got lots... We can continue doing our reviews after this song. I've got one more song to play before the end, and I've also got, which I prepared earlier, a movie facts. Not a quiz. Oh. I'm just going to tell you some bit of trivia.
Oh, I love it when you do this.
I know.
It's like when you did the thing where people like died on set and stuff like that.
Exactly. I've got a 10 top 10 movie trivia for the week. So that's going to be coming up.
Lovely.
I'm going to play this song from Brotherhood and bringing back a couple of the old Brotherhood ones.
Throwback. Hashtag.
Throwback. I said. No, this is Regularly by Jamie Joseph. Yes. And if you don't know, this is the part of the movie where I'm in and I get like a gun in my face. Okay, here we go.
Attention, cause I'm feeling some tension. Can you help me through it? Walls are falling around me. I can't live without boundaries. Maybe I should think twice before I go in the street. People say that I'm restless, building up so much stress, and I don't wanna just guess before I enter this game. Long awaited releases start to feel like diseases. Need more pleasure and pleases. I'm not taking the blame.
Vocals. Right, okay, I think it's time for my sci-fi movie facts.
Oh, I'm very excited.
But I did a little bit of research for so just to end the show on a bit of knowledge.
Lovely.
Before you go and get pissed and forget all of them.
Yep.
Okay. Righty. Number one, the club featured in The Matrix. Oh, no, maybe this might be better if I just put a little, hold on. Here we go.
Here we go.
Oh, this is even better. So dramatic.
The
love
club
it.
Featured in The Matrix was a real S&M club in Sydney, and all the extras were actual patrons of the club, and they were just asked to come in their own costumes.
Oh, crap.
Wow. So they're all real people and real S&M fanatics.
Oh.
Lovely.
Nice. And
growth.
Different view.
Number two, the spacesuits costumes in the Ridley Scott Alien, the original one, were so poorly ventilated.
That was a lie.
That the actors, they kept passing out from CO2.
Oh, gosh.
Like, inhalation.
That isn't safe.
Including his own kids, because his kids played certain roles. I think for perspectives, they put the smaller people filmed
parenting.
I know,
Scott.
So his kids kept passing out. Can you imagine?
That's a child abuse case right there.
That is
right
there.
Sorry,
terrible.
It was the
70s.
Yeah. Number three. 150 post-apocalyptic vehicles were made for Mad Max and destroyed for the movie.
Wow.
That was also a lie. The exit was a lie.
That's right.
That's crazy.
Number four. The term Blade Runner does not appear in the original story.
No.
Which is why it's like, why is it called Blade Runner? The reason why, it was borrowed from another film treatment that Ridley Scott read, and he liked it so much, he was like, well, I'm just going to call this movie Blade Runner. But it was nothing to do with the movie, not in the original story, and it was someone else's film.
Bold move, stupid move. Obviously, it's
I love
now.
The name of it.
Yeah, it's amazing.
So, you know what I mean?
Well done.
Elliot in the film E.T. never got a last name.
Shit.
Yeah, it's never mentioned, so he's just Elliot. So factoid.
Good one.
Number six. To help pitch the Terminator movie, James Cameron had actor Lance Henriksen dress up like a cyborg, kick in the producer's door and intimidate them for 15 minutes.
Oh my god.
Wow.
I thought he said kick in his head or something.
No, kick in the door to the board meeting and intimidate them for 15 minutes, and then they got a gist of what was going to be.
That's a long time.
That's a long time to be intimidated by a cyborg, not going to lie. Clive Owen's character in Children of Men does not pick up, use, or touch a gun for the entire entirety of the film.
I never noticed that.
I didn't notice it, but Clive Owen did not touch or use or pick up a gun.
I love
gun.
These little factoids.
Yeah, no, for real. Look into things deeper.
Yeah. Oh, the last one here. Last one to wrap up the show. Star Trek 2, called Wrath of Khan, was supposed to be called The Revenge of Khan, but it was rejected because it was too similar to Revenge of the Jedi.
Oh,
and at the time, the special effects team was working on both, so kind of had a say. And so Star Trek got shunted and called Wrath of Khan because it's too close to Revenge.
To be fair,
though,
that's pretty iconic now, so you know.
Exactly. Worked out.
Boom. So that was
lovely.
They're
so good. I love them.
Can remember it. You can now impress your mates in the pub tonight.
Yeah,
like, did you
saying.
Know?
Next pub quiz, I'll be smashing
Clive Owen never touched a gun in that.
Did you? No, I mean, I do that all the time anyway, and they're like, you're so boring, Lucy.
Don't be a hater.
Off the top of my head, I just remembered another Children of Men factoid. In the movie, Clive Owen's character wears a T-shirt that says 2012 London Olympic Games.
Oh, yeah, I knew that one for some reason.
Which was not surprising, because now we had 20. But when the movie was made in 2006,
we hadn't won then.
We hadn't won the game, so they predicted on the off chance they might
affirmation.
Get it.
That is
believe in you, shall achieve.
Yeah, and totally. The movie is set in like 2018.
It's not as scary as Simpsons predicting Trump as president, though. We have to.
I know.
We have to put that in there.
Right, we've got enough time to announce our competition winners.
Oh, exciting.
Our winners for this week, if you want to get involved, guys, every week we run competitions on our Twitter. It's at FUBAR Radio. All you have to do is be following us and just retweet the tweet, and then you're in a chance of winning.
And there's such good prizes always.
I know. I'm so good.
I'm so jealous that I can't get the prizes.
So the winners for our competition this week is Lamar Ellis and Daisy Edwards, and they've won a DVD of Loving and a DVD of Fences.
Wow.
Lovely.
And oh my gosh, tune in next week for our Baby Driver competition.
Baby Driver.
I'm going to go and see that this week. I'm going to prepare myself mentally and just go and deal with it.
Don't forget your card.
Yes, Cine World.
Do not forget your Cine World card.
Don't forget to ask me for it this time.
Oh my gosh. It is a prize bundle. So head over to our Twitter. Make sure you're following at FUBAR Radio. And you can also follow me at Johanna James if you want to. Ooh, little plug at the end.
Oh, lovely, lovely, lovely. Smooth criminal.
Thank you so much, Carl, for coming in.
No, thank you for having me.
Smashed it today.
I think I have too.
Well done. Thank you, Lucy.
You're
welcome.
And so what you're going to go see Baby Driver is your...
Yes, I'm going to just deal with my overwhelming instinct and just go and see it. I know it's going to be amazing, and that's the thing. I can't deal with things that are that good. I get so overwhelmed and I get obsessed with things. So Edgar Wright better watch out, because I'm going to be stalking him.
No, he didn't smash it. I want to go and see it again, but maybe also don't get your, because everyone is bigging it up. Like, that's what happened with La La Land. That's everyone true. Bigged it up, and I went in there with so much expectation that it then fell short.
Yeah, but see, I still love that, because I saw it from, not that I'm a filmmaker, but I saw it from a film appreciator's point of view. I saw it from, you know, someone who loves cinema so much. I saw what he was trying to do, and I think I'm probably going to see that with Baby Driver as well. If I am disappointed, I'm going to lie. So
okay, cool. back next week. And Kumar, do you want to come back?
I definitely want to come back if you can have me.
Well,
definitely.
Done. You've been, it's amazing. I'd say it's a
yep.
Oh yeah, lovely.
Woo. And oh my gosh. Oh, and I'm going to leave you this week with a trailer for Jumanji 2, because I'm super excited about this coming out. So I think you guys should have a little listen. Okay. And if you want to see the visuals, just go on Google or Apple trailers or anything like that, because it's The Rock,
Mr. Hart,
Jack Black,
Kevin Hart,
and Karen Gillian. So this has been Background Chill. Have an amazing weekend. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Detention, Spencer. Bethany, Fridge, Martha.
Are you gonna help, or are you too pretty?
I'm too pretty.
Yo, what's this?
A game for those who seek to find a way to leave their world behind. Jumanji. You pick a character, and you're that person in the game.
Which one do I pick?
I don't think it matters that much.
Noose Finbar. Sounds like a badass.
I'll be the curvy genius.
Dr. Smolder Bravestone.
I guess I'm Ruby Roundhouse.
Oh my God, Fridge?
Yeah, I'm Fridge. Who are you?
It's me, Spencer.
Who is she?
Martha? I think we got sucked into Jumanji and we've become the avatars we chose.
So that means...
Bethany?
Don't look at it! No!
I'm an overweight middle-aged man.
Damn, that is a man right there. Don't cry. Don't cry, it's gonna be okay.
I like can't even with this place.
That old game machine must have electrocuted us and now we're... Oh my God! You better get in there and save her.
I'm not gonna get in there.
You get in there. I got a backpack on. You don't get in water with a backpack. Everybody knows that.
Slipping on the solo one. Couldn't give a damn if I don't know no one. Slipping on the solo one. Couldn't give a damn if I don't know no one. Slipping on the solo one. Couldn't give a damn if I don't know no one. Slipping on the solo one. Couldn't give a damn if I don't know no one. White girl Carolina, she be in the joke with them. She loves them ride outs and them beaters. Can't forget my white girl Davina. You be looking cruddy in your black dress. Double barrel under the mattress. Turn your man them to ash. My boo boo cooking bangers and mash. Them boy pretty, J-House gruesome. Them boy bullcat, I can never choose them. What's that smell? Think I smell bacon. You and in them cabbies who's banging on them pagans. My don grip the strally, long sticks I carry. Couldn't give a damn about no Tom, Dick or Harry. Aisha with the batty, that's one chick I'd marry. Hit it from the back until I come quick for daddy. Hit it from the back until I come quick for daddy. Hit it from the back until I come quick for daddy. Lift that chick ugly, ugly like me. I take one for the team and ride that bird for my niggas. Looking for me, I ain't hard to find. My niggas ride out just to pass the time. Now my new team bugging me cause I forgot to call. Baby girl, you know you drive me up the wall. Slipping on the solo one. Couldn't give a damn if I don't know no one. Slipping on the solo one. Couldn't give a damn if I don't know no one. Slipping on the solo one. Couldn't give a damn if I don't know no one. Slipping on the solo one. Couldn't give a damn if I don't know no one. Slipping on the solo one. Couldn't give a damn if I don't know no one. Slipping on the solo one. Couldn't give a damn if I don't know no one. On a solo one, couldn't give a damn if I don't know no one. Slipping on a solo one, couldn't give a damn if I don't know no one.
This is a FUBAR Radio podcast. Go to FUBARradio.com for more details.